Okay, welcome to the show. I'm going to start things off here with an article from the BBC from yesterday, September 16th. Scotland welcomes the Pope on visit to Britain. Pope Benedict the 16th has begun a four-day historic visit to Britain. He flew into the Scottish capital, Edinburgh, where he was welcomed by Queen Elizabeth at the Palace of Holyrood House. Now that's spelled HOLYROODHOUSE. Similar to Hollywood. Holyrood House. Okay. The Pope said he wanted to extend a hand of friendship to the whole of the UK, but he sounded a warning, too, against what he called aggressive forms of secularism. On his journey to Scotland, the Pope admitted the church had not been vigilant enough against child abuse. Here's a video. You can see the airplane right here. The Pope flying in. Pope's coming in, baby.
It was as the Pope's aircraft brought him to Edinburgh that he spoke about the sex abuse scandal. Talking to reporters aboard the plane, he said the Catholic Church hadn't dealt with the problem decisively enough. These revelations were for me a shock and a great sadness, he said. This is a time of penitence. The first priority is taking care of the victims. And that's probably all the Pope will say about the matter. Scandals aren't part of the public script of papal visits. Benedict XVI isn't a showman like his predecessor, so there was no kneeling to kiss the ground. The man greeted by the Duke of Edinburgh is a rather shy and scholarly man. The Duke escorted the Pope through a military guard of honour. Soldiers
Prince
recently
Philip,
returned
by the way.
From Afghanistan.
The Duke.
Absent from the cardinals travelling with the Pope, his friend Cardinal Casper, whose comparison of Britain to a third-world nation is said not to reflect the Vatican view. The Pope was shown to a vehicle with such heavily tinted windows that, once inside, he was invisible, a disappointment to anyone who'd taken the trouble to watch his cavalcade travelling to the city, though, as it happened, not many had. At the Palace of Holyrood House, in the centre of Edinburgh, the Queen was waiting to greet him. Two holders of ancient offices, of the same generation and with a shared Christian faith, yet separated by 500 years of division between Anglican and Catholic churches. This is an occasion with many of the trappings of a state visit. The Vatican State's anthem was played. In her speech of welcome, the Queen talked of the importance of people being free to worship.
Your Holiness, in recent times, you have said that religions can never become vehicles of hatred, that never by invoking the name of God can evil and violence be justified. Today, in this country, we stand united in that conviction. We hold that freedom to worship is at the core of our tolerant and democratic society.
In reply, the Pope talked about the atheist extremism of the 20th century and warned about aggressive secularism now.
Today's United Kingdom strives to be a modern and multicultural society. And this challenging enterprise may it always maintain its respect for those traditional values and cultural expressions that more aggressive forms of secularism no longer value or even tolerate.
The Queen took the Pope on a brief guided tour of Holyrood House, and they exchanged gifts. She gave him a set of drawings, he gave her an 8th century gospel. And then it was time for the first major encounter with the public. The Pope boarded his special glass-topped vehicle for the drive through the centre of Edinburgh. In places, the crowd stood 10 to 12 deep. They watched as the Pope went by, a special papal tartan draped over his shoulders. The There were protesters, groups who'd come to express their anger with the Pope's opposition to women priests, to contraception and abortion, and his criticism of homosexuality. And inevitably, there was the Reverend Ian Paisley, or Lord Banside as he is now. No papal visit would be complete without a protest by him. But the overwhelming majority of those who gathered to greet the Pope were welcoming. Some, perhaps a good many, had come out of curiosity, but many too were there because of a sense of real commitment.
It's hard to judge the public side of this welcome. It's sincere, certainly, from those who were here. The numbers were a little hesitant to begin with, but the crowds have appeared, and they now line the half-mile length of Prince's Street.
And for many of those who were on Prince's Street, it was something that had mattered to them.
My husband and I are both Roman Catholics, and we're just very excited about it and wanted to come through to Edinburgh and be part of it.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime chance for me, really. I mean, he hasn't made Ireland yet as a new Pope, so I'm just glad I got a chance to see him.
Finally in Edinburgh, the Pope met members of the public on a brief walkabout. The scandals were forgotten as Pope Benedict XVI brought his message of the importance of God in the modern world. Nicholas Witchell, BBC News, Edinburgh.
All right, see, these are the type of meetings that are really interesting. The Pope popes on over to Britain and meets with the Queen Lizard of England. So what are they talking about? He's going to be there for 4 days. It's sure seems like it's something important. Yeah. Okay. I don't know what they're talking about, but it's meetings like this. And the mainstream media coverage is just like, oh, the Pope was welcomed by the Queen. And they just kind of gloss over things and no big deal. He's just visiting her. Okay, this is on davidicke.com. It's a preview to an article he wrote that's going to go out in his newsletter tomorrow, I think. So this is just a preview of the article. Two of a kind, and the end is nigh. It's got a photo of the Pope and the Queen, with good old Prince Philip walking behind him. Here we go. Pope Benedict XVI has been widely criticized for his handling, or lack of it, of the child abuse revelations all over the world. Every move in response has been motivated by damage limitation, to his church rather than compassion and justice for the victims. A BBC documentary, Sex Crimes in the Vatican, revealed how, when the Pope was known as Cardinal Thomas Ratzinger, he sent out an updated version of the notorious 1962 Vatican document, Crimen Solicitonius, Latin for the crime of solicitation, which imposed the Vatican's strict instructions on how to cover up sexual scandal. It even talked about slush funds or hush funds being used to silence the victims. The document was so secret that it included instructions that bishops had to keep it locked away in a safe at all times. So much for the compassion of the church. Never mind the unimaginable lifelong impact on the children. Keep the lid down to protect the perpetrators. Pope Benedict, as Cardinal Ratzinger, was head for 24 years of the powerful Congregation of the Doctrine of the Faith, the department of the Roman Catholic Church charged with promoting Catholic teachings on morals and matters of faith. How ironic. He was also known as the Enforcer for and controller of the puppet Pope John Paul II, and took charge of blocking any challenges to the status quo of traditional Catholic teachings. Benedict has been forced to accept the unfolding scale of what has happened and is still happening, only by that scale becoming even more obvious, not least with the revelations of the hundreds of abused children in Belgium, at least 13 of whom committed suicide. So that's the end of the excerpt from this article. I'm looking forward to reading this whole thing if I can get it. So it doesn't... this all seems so backwards. If the church, if the Catholic Church is supposedly compassionate and caring, and then you have all these people throughout the Roman Catholic Church who are like authority figures and they're raping little kids. That's pretty sick, man. And it's like, so he goes over to England and he's all shaking hands with Tony Blair and the Queen and all this, and it's like, meanwhile, you know, the British Army is like taking part in this war in Iraq and Afghanistan, along with U.S. troops, Israeli troops, whoever else got suckered into this, and they're just like, for the past few years, they've been slaughtering people in the Middle East. And, oh well. No big deal. Good to see you, Tony Blair. Yeah. Good job on getting all those people to go fight in these wars. Yeah. Kudos to you, sir. It just seems that things are so backwards. They're not... they don't care. They don't care for people. It's like they don't seem to even be near the average level of human compassion. They seem to be so far from that. And they're like conniving perverts and weirdos. I'm sorry. Oh my God. The Pope and the Queen. What a pair that is. Okay, I'm sorry. Alright. Also related to the Vatican is this article here I noticed. Called, "I'd Love to Baptize E.T., Says Vatican's Stargazer." Dailymail.co.uk, September 17th, 2010, by David Derbyshire. The Mail Online. Okay, intelligent aliens may be living among us, among the stars, and are likely to have souls, a senior Vatican scientist said yesterday. The Pope's astronomer, Guy Consolmagno, said he would be happy to baptize an alien but admitted that the chances of communicating with life outside the Earth were low. Speaking at the British Science Festival in Birmingham, Dr. Consolmagno also dismissed creationism and claimed that the rival of intelligent design, the controversial theory that only God can explain gaps in the theory of evolution, was bad theology. Dr. Consolmagno, one of a team of 12 astronomers working for the Vatican, said the Catholic Church had been supporting and funding science for centuries. A self-confessed science fiction fan, he said he was comfortable with the idea of alien life. Asked if he would baptize an alien, he replied, "Only if they asked." He added, "I'd be delighted if we found life elsewhere, and delighted if we found intelligent life elsewhere. But the odds of us finding it, of it being intelligent, and us being able to communicate with it, when you add them up, it's probably not a practical question." God is bigger than just humanity. God is also the God of the angels. End quote. In the Middle Ages, the definition of a soul was to have intelligence, free will, freedom to love, and freedom to make decisions, he said. Those characteristics may not be unique to humans. Any entity, no matter how many tentacles it has a soul, he added. Huh. In practice, machines were unlikely to be smart or human enough to have souls. Dr. Consolmagno, 57, the curator of the Pope's meteorite collection, is a trained astronomer and planetary scientist at the Vatican's observatory. On intelligent design, which claims that Darwin's theory of evolution cannot explain the complexity of life, he said, the word has been hijacked by a narrow group of creationist fundamentalists in America to mean something it didn't originally mean at all. It's another form of the God of the gaps. It's bad theology in that it turns God, once again, into the pagan god of thunder and lightning. The phrase intelligent design was centuries old and described the idea that God could be discovered in the laws of space and time and the existence of human reason. Well, that's interesting. Alright, here's an interesting article. Retired NORAD officer's new book predicts a tentative worldwide UFO display on October 13th, 2010. Okay, 2 years ago, I remember Blossom Goodchild said she channeled information and that UFOs were going to show up on October 14th, 2008. Like, if the information she, like, what she channeled, it said, if enough people wanted the aliens to show up, then they would. Which, that didn't happen, I don't think. So here's this retired NORAD officer saying, on 10/13/2010, he predicts a worldwide UFO display. Here we go. A newly published book by a retired NORAD officer predicts October 13th, 2010 as the tentative date for a fleet of extraterrestrial vehicles to hover for hours over the Earth's principal cities. Author says the event to be the first. This is kind of poorly written. Oh, maybe this is just the beginning. This is just the subtitle. Author says the event to be the first in a series intended to avert a planetary catastrophe resulting from increasing levels of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere, dangerously approaching a critical mass. Oh, this sounds like disinfo. Okay, reading on. So this article looks like from PR Web out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, September 13th, 2010. Exactly a month between October. Before October 13th. A newly published 352-page book by a retired Air Force officer, Stanley A. Fulham, tentatively predicts October 13th, 2010 as the date for a massive UFO display over the world's principal cities. According to the author, the aliens will neither land nor communicate on that date. They are aware from eons of experience with other planets and similar conditions their sudden intervention would cause fear and panic. The book, Challenges of Change, 3rd edition, reports this event will be the initial interaction in a process leading to mankind's acceptance of the alien reality and technologies for the removal of poisonous gases from the Earth's atmosphere in 2015, if not sooner. The author draws upon his military experience with the UFO phenomenon dating back to World War II and later with NORAD at his subsequent lifelong association with a senior NORAD intelligence officer who provided him a wealth of historic data relating to NORAD's experience with the UFO alien reality, which has never been revealed to the public. In the military's view, as conveyed to and understood by Fulham, the public is not yet ready to accept an alien reality. I don't know. Hold on, I gotta flip this record. Hold on. Okay. Fulham writes, it is generally recognized UFOs function beyond our Earth's physical laws, and has concluded answers to questions regarding who they are, where they are from, why they are here, are they a threat, and the mystery of abductions could only be found at a higher dimension of reality. For more than a decade, through the services of a world-renowned channeler, the author has communicated with an ethereal group of entities known as the Transcenders. Never heard of them. Ethereal group of entities. 43,000 very old souls who combine their vast experience and knowledge through eons of incarnations, providing advice and information to humans in search of basic realities of mankind's existence. The book, Challenges of Change, reports on the author's years of communication with the Transcenders in a question and answer format intended to inform and challenge. The Transcenders reveal, through the author, crucial information about urgent global challenges facing mankind, such as Earth changes, international terrorism, worldwide financial collapse, and the environmental crisis. One revelation is Al-Qaeda has a dirty nuclear bomb and WMD, but faces a moral quandary over containment of collateral damages. Using the theme of the Four Horsemen as symbolic metaphor, Fulham warns mankind will survive all of these future challenges except the CO2 pollution of our atmosphere. According to information provided to the author by the Transcenders, the buildup of CO2 pollution is rising 1% annually to a critical mass of 22%, in which mankind could not survive without outside intervention. According to Fulham, the Transcenders state they have borne witness to countless thousands of alien civilizations who polluted their planets to total extinction, where not a single being, animal, or plant survived. They urgently warn planet Earth is presently on the same self-destructive path. Fulham reports the aliens are well aware of our environmental crisis and have benevolently decided to rescue mankind in this vast universal drama. Well, I'll say right now, I don't think, in my personal opinion, that there's going to be any worldwide UFO display on 10/13/2010. You can quote me on that. It's 9/18/2010. Fulham has been in contact with a distinguished foreign ambassador who read the book with great interest and dispatched it to his home government, where it was translated and studied by hundreds of their top government officials. A website containing videos of the author discussing his research conclusions and other vital information has been created at sites.google.com/site/challenges-of-change. Fulham clarifies there are no absolutes. The principle of free will and choice that exists with all souls precludes all absolute realities, and the aliens may decide to postpone their intervention. But the Transcenders confirm it will nonetheless occur in 2010. Which is the year we make contact, after all. Okay, quoting the author, the event will occur this year in what will surely be one of the great dramas of our galaxy. Well, yeah, it would be. The introduction of their alien civilizations and technologies to mankind. We are not alone, and our world will have changed forever. I don't know about all this CO2 doom and gloom, because, like, humans exhale CO2 from their bodies, and okay, so the urgent global challenges that the Transcenders supposedly revealed to this guy facing mankind are Earth changes, which makes me think of Planet X coming back, which may be real, international terrorism is so fake, at least the threat posed by it, worldwide financial collapse. Okay, that was orchestrated on purpose, by design. And the environmental crisis. Okay, the environmental crisis. Oh my god, I've watched for years their huge propaganda campaign to get people to think that rising CO2 levels are heating up the planet tremendously and we're all doomed and the polar bears are all gonna die unless we have a new way of living. I mean, these are all like even Earth changes. That could be considered asteroids. I mean, these are all excuses I've heard for setting up a one-world government. Global threats require global solutions. So that right there makes me very skeptical of this thing. This guy's retired from NORAD. And he's saying that he has channeled information that we're going to see all these UFOs on 10/13. And this article is circulating the web pretty thoroughly. Okay, here's a song by Adam Go Riley. Okay, here's Freeman. Check this out.
We all live in different realities, there's no doubt about that. They're trying to form a one unified reality, but as we start to look towards what we're trying to actually get to, and that is liberty, freedom, justice for all, which is a global cry. We are now knowing within from all the internet realms that this is a global cry. It doesn't matter if you're in the Netherlands, in Africa, in Peru, or wherever. We're all saying the same thing. All over the globe. All over the globe. Namah Shivaya. Om Namo. Om Namo. Namo. And so you can't reject anything that comes your way. The universe is trying to speak to you and give you what you need, but you're rejecting it because you think you know what you deserve and what you need, which has all been conditioned and programmed by our culture creators such as Walt Disney, Monsanto, and everyone else. So the answer to our problem is actually invisible, and it is called synchronicity, but it's an answer that no one can show you. No one can show you. And so now we're asking humanity to have faith in humanity when the Dark Brotherhood is making it so impossible to do so. Because we think all of this is our fault. Because we think all of this is our fault. Because we think all of this is our fault. So we need to find that faith in humanity, because listen to all these people that have come out here, every single one of them, a loving, caring, nurturing being that just wants to uplift humanity. Well, that's the majority. Well, that's the majority. Well, that's the majority. That's the television's telling you the total opposite. Fear those people in a van. Fear, don't go outside. You know, you don't want to be meeting around with people. And that's exactly what you should be doing. And that's exactly what you should be doing. And that's exactly what you should be doing. And that's exactly. And the synchronicities will start to unfold, and then you'll actually believe in miracles. Anything that comes your way, go with it, and do it to your fullest. You know, that's my message to the world, because it'll guide you to your soul's purpose. And if you let your light shine, you know, to your fullest when something comes your way, then it'll magnify and become even more than you ever anticipated. And the best thing is that everything's better than you could have ever dreamed it. Everything's better than you could have ever dreamed it. Everything's better than you could have ever dreamed it. And I know that's a hard message to sell when the BP oil spill, with the volcanoes, with the corruption, with everything that's going down, the police state, you know, all of it. It's hard to tell people to regain their faith in humanity, to forgive the anger that you have for these people that have trespassed on you, and to just start seeking the new existence. But we have to. That's what we have to do. We're the voice now. We're the voice now. We're the voice now.
Alright, David Icke was in South Africa a few weeks ago, and I'm going to play some audio of him with Credo Mutwa on August 22nd, 2010. Here we go.
Honorable friends, it is one of the ironies of history. It is one of the things that happen in this world in which we live.
Yeah.
That where men unleashed violence against fellow men, there shall the temples of peace be built.
Yeah.
Right here. Right here. Battles were fought.
Okay.
Right here. Men were killed.
Oh, yes.
In some parts of this place, you find old bullets. In some parts of this place, you find pieces of artillery shell.
Oh.
Because here, first black fought white, and later white fought white.
Oh.
As recently as the 1930s, there were wars going on here. In this place, may a temple of peace be built to take away all the bitterness
yeah.
of the past and all the pain.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Amen. Amen.
Well, I'd like to thank Credo for his words. And I've traveled to 50 countries
yeah.
over
yeah.
my life, and I just see the same people everywhere. They want the same things. How many people I've met in my life that wanted a war, that wanted to fight, that wanted conflict? I couldn't count them on that hand, probably, if that. And yet, the world is full of conflict. And conflict comes from people's state of mind, what is in their heart, what is in their head. And it matters not whether you are black, white, yellow, or any color you want to think of. It's still, as Martin Luther King said, not about the color of your skin, but the strength of your character. And so we have a world where, as Credo pointed out, in this place, black fought white. And sometime later, white fought white. And what's happening in parts of this country now? Black fights black. Tribe fights tribe. This is not about color. It's not about race. It's about what's in here. And when we open this, we realize, as Credo has seen from his great life and I've seen from my travels, when you open this, there is only one language.
Yes.
There's only one color.
Yeah.
There's only one us,
yes.
an infinite I, all part of and expressions of the great ocean.
Yes.
That is what you call God. I'll call the infinite. The name matters not. Only that we are expressions of this infinite consciousness, infinite awareness. And this is our connection to it right here. This can shut us off from this because it gets caught in mind and wanting this and wanting that and desire and material things. And this can close down and be dormant while this governs, and this says, I want this. How do I get it? I must fight. We must fight. We must have a war.
Yeah.
This says, you're fighting with yourself because we're all expressions of the same one I. And if this church, this temple of peace, as Credo calls it, can be put into this place of historic conflict, then it's an expression of the heart in a place that was desecrated by an obsession with the mind. And we are going into an era when the heart will start to rule and the head will take its place as the servant of the heart and not its master any longer. So I wish you every success in putting this temple of peace in this place. And what an honor it has been to meet you all today, and that wonderful music. And it's always an honor to meet Virginia, and always an honor to meet the greatest human being it is my privilege to know. Thank you very much.
Thank you.